Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning. This is Tracy Hales Bass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE, the information and cultural beacon of the Four Corners in Farmington, New Mexico. Today I'm talking with Jennifer Edelson about her award-winning young adult fantasy novels Between Wild and Ruin and Wild Open Faces. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning.
So I really enjoyed your award-winning books. Would you categorize these like as paranormal?
They are, you know, they're actually shelved with Library of Congress's paranormal romance, I think.
Okay.
I've gotten to know them better. I actually think they're probably, I know there's a really fine line between paranormal romance and urban fantasy.
Mm.
In fact, I think if you look up the definitions, they're almost the same, but I actually think of it more as an urban fantasy.
Okay.
With romantic elements, although the romance is definitely, you know, a big part of the story.
It is. It is. The love story is huge.
Yeah.
But
at least in the first book, yeah.
Right, right. And I think that without it, the second book wouldn't be nearly as full.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think the first one, I focused on the romance more.
Right.
And although not necessarily resolved in the second one, I think it's probably more plot-driven.
I think so.
True, but it's less romance-driven, yeah.
Right, right. And this is about a couple of teenagers. Well, Ezra, I guess, is,
so they're young adults.
Okay, young adults. That sounds,
yeah,
perfect.
Yeah, basically, I mean, the main character, Ruby, at the beginning is just turning 18.
Right.
And most of them are between 18 and 22, I think.
That sounds good, yeah.
Yeah.
Ruby is from California and moves to this little town of La Luna, New Mexico.
Right.
And has just lost her mother. And it's in first person. It's in Ruby's point of view all the way through.
Correct.
And you really capture her character and mourning for her mother and her self-doubt and lack of confidence. And
thank you. I appreciate hearing that. You know, I know I can't please everybody all the time, so I've, you know, heard mixed things about her. I know people love Ezra, but
yes.
Ruby is a character that I like a lot. Obviously, I wrote her. But I've heard mixed things. Some people really, really respond to her and relate to her, and other people, you know, think she's a teenager.
She is a teenager.
Right, which, you know, I don't think is a bad thing. I have them myself.
No, she's very believable.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I try to be, one of the things I like about writing in the YA genre is that although I'm far from being a teenager, I still really, really remember what it felt like to be a teenager.
Yeah.
I also remember feeling like, you know, teenagers just didn't get enough credit.
Right.
So in writing her as an adult, she's not an adult, so I tried to make her, you know, realistic. I think she may be too realistic for some people, but other people relate to her really well.
I could tell that you remembered being a teenager while writing her, because not only her, but her girlfriends. I guess that maybe you could give the listeners, we're going on and on talking about it, but maybe you could sum it up for us.
How do you feel about me reading from the back of the book?
Why don't you do that? I think that sounds great.
The first one, so it's a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Wild and Ruin Trilogy. The first two books are out. The first book in the trilogy is called Between Wild and Ruin, and this is from the back of it.
Okay.
And truth, like love, isn't always obvious. 17-year-old Ruby Brooks has never had a boyfriend. After moving to small town La Luna, New Mexico, following her mother's untimely death, boys aren't even on her radar. Ruby just wants to forget the last horrible year and blend in. But when she discovers an ancient Pueblo ruin in the forest behind her house and meets Ezra, a bitter recluse whose once perfect face was destroyed in an accident he won't talk about, Angel, La Luna's handsome sheriff's deputy, and Leo, a stranger who only appears near the ruin, Ruby finds herself teetering between love, mystery, and other worlds. What happened to Ezra's face, and why is she so attracted to the one boy in town everybody despises? As Ruby unravels her own connections to both Ezra and the Pueblo ruin, she'll learn surfaces are deceiving, especially in the heart of New Mexico, where spirits and legends aren't always just campfire stories. Okay, and the second one in the trilogy is called Wild Open Faces, and here's the part, the copy from the back.
Mm-hmm.
Surfaces are deceiving. After falling for Ezra and discovering a gateway to the Otherworld, it's a truism Ruby knows to take to heart. But La Luna feels like home, or finally feels like home, and with graduation just weeks away and a cushy internship on a nearby archaeological dig in her pocket, it's easy to downplay the strange new events taking place in the Glorieta Pass. Even when Angel's deadbeat father reappears after 20 years, stirring up questions about Angel, the ruin, and Ruby's mother. Uncertainty is bad enough, but when Ruby starts having inexplicable visions and the archaeological dig unearths mysterious artifacts connected to both a fabled Aztec city and the Pecos Pueblo, Ruby faces more than an uncertain future. She's forced to accept the role of Two of Heart. While Ezra and her friends stand by her, she confronts the Otherworld. But the Otherworld may be the biggest mystery of them all. I hope that gives us some kind of background. It's really hard for me to sum both of them up because, well, I know there's like an underlying thread that draws it all together, but I feel like there's so many subplots.
There are.
Sub things. And in fact, that's, I think, what made it hard for me when maybe not when I wrote it, but when I sat down and really got into editing, because it was actually hard for my brain to follow, you know, and think of all the places it was going to and sort of pull it back to a place where it wasn't too unwieldy. So when it comes to trying to sum it up on the fly, I still have that problem. I guess because it means so many different things to me.
It's complex, but it works in that. And when you're dealing with fantasy like this, I mean, you're talking about things that are hard to talk about, right?
Yeah. I'm really interested in the idea, like concepts of identity. And I mean, this is, you know, a real teenage thing, but I still do this, you know, debating sort of the meaning of life and meaning itself. And I think I really, you know, I was thinking a lot about that when I wrote these. So it does deal with identity, which I'm sure you probably picked up on.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that surface, you know, never, I mean, it's really someone up, never judge a book by its cover, which is kind of cliche, but I try not to examine that in a cliche way, but that is something I'm really interested in as well.
Right.
What you see it isn't always what you get.
There's a lot of play with mirrors, maybe not play, but with Ruby never wanting to look in one, and then one of the characters has a mirror-like pendant. I think that...
Oh, in the second one, yeah.
In the second
book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. In the first book, she doesn't like looking in the mirror.
Right.
And in the second one, and that actually has a lot to do with the actual folklore of the character you're talking about. I don't quite want to give it away, but the folklore,
right.
The real folklore, that mirror pendant is actually part of his story, his backstory. So,
well,
but it fit really well into my world as well when I was putting it all together.
Well, that's really fascinating, bringing up the folklore. I recognized many aspects of old New Mexico folklore. So were you really involved and interested in that before you started writing these?
Yeah, I really was, actually. I think, you know, people ask me, well, why did you write the book? And I'm really drawn to places.
Mm-hmm.
And I've lived in New Mexico for about 4 years, but I have spent all my summers here since I was about 6.
Oh.
And we've been, I grew up in Los Angeles. We come out here to hike and spend time. And then when I lived in Minnesota for a long time. I moved there for college. But my husband and I would come back every summer. In fact, we got engaged here in Santa Fe, and then we decided we'd move here. We had a 10-year plan. But then we had kids, and it took a lot longer. But we took our kids back here every summer, and we'd hike. And it was a draw for both of us. I mean, there's something about, you know, I mean, I know a lot of artists and writers say that there's something about New Mexico that's really compelling. It could be the lights or the feeling, or there's so many things. But for me, I really love to hike and be out in nature. And we would come out here and we would hike, and there's these particular areas in the Glorieta Pass, which is where this story takes place, that I was really drawn to. We would hike out there. I always had to go and visit the Pecos Pueblo because mm-hmm. it just, the history was really intriguing to me. So I did a lot of reading for years, not even really about the folklore. I was just really interested in the Pueblo cultures and the different Native American stories and just the culture and history here. And so that was fascinating to me, but I realized that the actual Glorieta to Pass was really, you know, people say, like, people in Santa Fe are really woo-woo.
Right.
I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm not exactly a woo-woo person. I'm actually kind of skeptical, but when I was in the past, I always felt a really, I want to say, mystical draw,
mm-hmm.
and I knew for a long time that I wanted to write about it, and I also had this fascination with some of the culture and history, and I guess the folklore, too, but I actually, when I started reading about the Pecos, realized, because, you know, they're gone, the culture is gone for the most part, and there are a lot of interesting stories, but there's nothing really concrete. It just seemed like a really good place to focus the story because I like the area, because the Pecos history is really interesting, and I had a lot of leeway for creative license.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be really
mm-hmm.
careful about, you know, writing about peoples in New Mexico and the culture and the history, too. I guess I wanted to be really respectful. I didn't want to write about anybody or anything, you know, that I hadn't really researched and also, you know, still around. I didn't want
right.
to mess with people's cultures.
Right, right. I understand what you're saying. Right.
And I've always loved the Mesoamerican cultures, too, mm-hmm. as a little kid. Like, I think I wrote all my papers and, you know, in school and elementary and high school about that. So that played into it, too.
Mm-hmm.
And there did seem to be some real, I did a lot of research, and I found the timelines between the Pecos and some of the Mesoamerican cultures and the folklore. There's a lot of crossover. I mean, after
yes.
a while, I was like, maybe I've stumbled onto something
right.
that no one knows about.
Right.
So it just all worked out that way.
Well, that's really interesting. So did you have the idea for the book before you started doing the research? Were you writing it while you were researching, or did you kind of let the book lead the way?
I kind of let the book lead, the first book,
mm-hmm.
lead the way. I think I probably was telling myself a story at one point. I think a lot of writers do this, at least a lot of writers, I know it. You know, I can't sleep at night. I'll tell myself stories lying in bed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an insomniac. And I think this is maybe the story at some point years ago. The first book is actually really an old story for me. I mean, it's probably almost 15 years old.
Mm.
And in fact, that's when I started writing it. The first book has a really long history itself,
oh, wow.
the book itself, the writing process. But, I started just telling myself stories at night. And I was already in love with the area. I knew I wanted to write about it. And I was trying to think about what I wanted to write. And I knew I wanted it to be mystical and paranormal and sort of mirror the way I felt about the area. And the story, which wasn't necessarily set there, it just came to be in my head, but it felt like the perfect story for the place. But it wasn't really filled in. It was like the bones of a story. It was a skeleton. And so I took the idea and the place and put them together. And I had no idea what the plot was going to be, where it was going to end, where it was going to start. This was really the most organic process of all the writing I've done, this first book, Between Wild and Ruin. And, I just started writing and let it take me where where it felt like it wanted to go, which wasn't always the right place. I had to go back at times, but
right.
yeah, it just unfolded on its own for the most part.
And the characters also, did they just introduce themselves to you?
Yeah, and I don't know how to describe that. I know I've talked to writers who they really do say, like, the characters came to me and they told me about themselves
mm-hmm.
and they talked to me, and I haven't actually had that relationship with my characters. I kind of hope that happens one day. I'm not really sure how to explain how, you know, they came to me. I guess maybe they did just come to me because I don't think I really sat down and thought, this is how I want them to be.
Right.
I know I had a clearer picture of Ezra. That might come actually across in the book. I think he's maybe a little more, I don't know if he's more defined or not, but I had a clearer picture of what I wanted him to be sort of big picture wise. Ruby, I'd like to say actually we kind of grew up together.
Yeah.
I think she became clear to me as I started writing her. So she kind of did expose herself the more, you know, more and more, the more I went on. Whereas Ezra, I always knew he was going to be. Same with Angel.
Right.
Although I think Angel evolved for me in the second book a lot.
Now, what I'm wondering, why you chose to write this in Ruby's first person?
Partly it's the genre. I think for YA literature, first person is pretty popular. It's not, like, I've written since then, I've written a number of books, actually, since this the first one, Between Wild and Ruin. I'm actually about to release a book, a YA book right now, which is not first person.
Oh.
And I'm thinking about whether or not, although it's pretty immediate, I was thinking about whether or not which I like better. And I think it just, I tried writing Between Wild and Ruin a couple different ways. And I think I sit down, and when I write any book, I usually kind of play with the voice, and that's something that I feel like sort of stands out. Like, I can tell almost immediately which one sounds better, and that just felt, it was more immediate. It made the story feel more pressing for me, and although I know not everybody loves first person, I had a lot of really good feedback. People seem to like her voice, and so I like take a lot of, I give up my stories to beta readers, and I take their advice seriously, and I think it just worked.
It does work. I found Ruby to be very, like I said, realistic, and her voice to be really strong. I mean, she's, like you said, identity. She's trying to figure out who she is and what it means to be who she is.
Correct, yeah. I think that was a real, I think I was trying to sort of drive that home. I think they're all trying to figure out who they are. I think we're all trying to figure out who we are.
I think so.
I feel like I'm still trying to figure out who I am sometimes. So, I tried to... I think that was important for me, and I think she's still trying to figure out, but I think in the second book, Wild Open Faces, you know, she grows. I mean, you'd hope
she
that
does.
The main character, you know, she's younger, but she grows, and I think she's continuing to grow, and I think she will hopefully by the end of the series know who she is, I mean, as much as she can at that age. But
now you actually literally left the second book as a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
So when is the next one coming out?
Well, I'm currently writing it. I'm taking a little bit longer because, like I said, I have a new book coming out in July. It was on the back burner a little bit because I had a lot of work to do for that. But I'm hoping for another December release. But there's nothing actually, it's not concrete at the moment.
Okay.
The last two books, I knew the release date. This one, there's a little bit of limbo, but it's soon.
Good.
And I am writing it, so
good.
That's the thing. I'm in the process of writing it.
Yeah.
I have a clearer vision for this third one. The first one, you know, it was organic and unfolded. The second one, I knew where it was going, but I was still sort of playing with it. The third one, I sort of have the beginning to end, you know, outlined in my head. So
good.
It should be faster.
Why did you choose to leave it where you did? I don't want to give it away or tell that, but I'm just curious.
Sure. I initially had only meant for this to be one book.
Oh.
And I had been working with an agent for a while on the first book, and she had a vision for it to be more than one book. And so a lot of what was a longer first book got turned into a first book and then half a second book.
Uh-huh.
And so when I sat down to finish the second book, I realized that I could finish the series up in a very long second book, but that probably wasn't the most desirable thing. I mean, it would have been really long. So I just, it felt better to me to give it more room to breathe. I think the third book is going to be more of a fun adventure, and it will literally start right where whereas the first book, there's time between the first and the second book. The third book picks up right where the second one starts.
Oh, good.
And I cut it there because, I mean, there's just really, in order to, if I had gone on, it would have gone into this whole other sort of mythology and area that it wouldn't have been good to cut in the middle. It just was
right.
The most natural place to stop it.
Well, it works, and it definitely keeps us,
I'm glad to hear that,
you know, on our toes.
Yeah, and luckily, the feedback I've had has been pretty positive. People, you know, want more, but they're not devastated that it ends right there. Like, they know there's more, but
right. It's
not like, oh, my gosh. Well, there is some of that, but it's a good, oh, my gosh.
So you took a break from this to write another book. Now, was that difficult to switch?
It was, actually. I found that the second book, I was actually working with a publishing house, and they had asked for a series of rewrites, and I was not having a lot of luck in sort of hitting the mark there. And so I took a break and finished. I was trying to finish the second one and work on this one at the same time. I took a break from this book that I'm about, that, well, not about, but that is in the pipeline for release, and finished Wild Evan Faces, and then took a couple months off. And once I went back, I felt much better about it. It was just like I couldn't do two lives, you know, two separate stories and lives with the same, because I think maybe because I get so into them.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when I went back to, in the book that I am currently, the new book that's coming out is called True North.
True North?
Yeah, I feel like I really nailed it once I was able to step away from the Wild and Ruined trilogy and give myself a few months to just get it out of my system. And so, you know, I had actually started writing the third book, and I put that aside to finish True North. And now that I'm done and there's no more editing, any of that stuff, I have gone back to the third book, which is currently untitled in the Wild and Ruined trilogy. So yeah, it was hard until I had a real concentrated amount of, like, effort, time, I guess,
mm-hmm, right,
to just put into it.
Now, True North, what briefly is that about?
Well, I kind of pitched it as Close Encounters meets E.T. meets Pump Up the Volume, which are all movies, but I tend to think in movies when I write books.
Well, I could see that, yeah.
It takes place in Santa Fe, and it's about a young woman in high school in Santa Fe. Well, it's not Santa Fe High, but it's the equivalent of Santa Fe High, who basically starts channeling coordinates that predict UFO sightings in the Southwest.
That.
And this is an action-adventure story, and she has a internet radio show where she masquerades as a host, as the radio host. Her name is Orion. That's not her real name, but that's her host name. Mm-hmm. And no one knows it's her at school. So she's kind of living this double life. And it's a mystery. She's trying to figure out why she's channeling these coordinates, what they mean, why, whether the UFO sightings are actual real sightings or on her show. You know, she talks about them and people call in and tells her she's seen them. And it becomes clear that they are real. She gets this anonymous caller to her show who asks her to help him find his way home. You know, put home, quote unquote.
Right.
And it's kind of what happens, and you know, what happens with these coordinates, and with her friends, and just if you saw any of the three movies that I sort mm-hmm. of said, like, you know, meets, it's, I feel like it's just a big mashup of those. It's just sci-fi. It's light sci-fi, but it's a fun sort of, and there's a love story. I would say there's a romance in it, but it's not romance driven.
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a pitch for it somewhere. I would have to read it to you, though, because, again, I don't memorize these.
That's okay.
It's a really fun story. I had a lot of fun with it. I mean, it was, I think people will really like it. I feel like it's a quick read. It's, I don't think I'm dealing with big issues or trying to, you know, it's not like the meaning of life, but it's fun.
It does sound fun. So it sounds like you're actually now a full-time writer.
Yeah, for the most part, I am. Mm-hmm. That is correct.
Whatever that means, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I get sidetracked a lot. So much to do. I still have kids in the house. But yes, I do. That's all I do. I do some legal consulting still. I shouldn't say I was an attorney. I am an attorney, but I don't practice. I do some legal editing as well. I've done other people's manuscripts. I basically concentrate on helping them, especially with nonfiction, actually all nonfiction. You know, looking at sort of liability issues, what they've written, legal editing around that, but mostly it's all writing related.
Well, that sounds like such an opposite kind of reading between your paranormal fantasy and then the legal and ethical aspects of someone else's writing.
It really is. I taught legal research and writing at the University of Minnesota Law School.
Oh, wow.
For a while, and people used to say that to me. I mean, I have, like, I have two people, like I have a split brain, you know?
Right.
And it's right down the middle, so right brain, left brain. They work pretty well together.
Yeah.
I actually sometimes think that legal writing brain is a hindrance when I'm writing creatively, not because I'm not good at creative writing, but I think I overanalyze the things I write and over-edit, and that becomes a problem sometimes. It gets in the way.
I can understand that.
But they are definitely very different processes.
Right.
Legal writing is all about brevity, too, right? Clarity and brevity.
Right. I think it's interesting that you said you see your books in movie form. because of the vivid scenes that you do make. And actually, when I was reading these two books, I thought about what good films they'd make.
Yeah, I've heard that before. And actually, these books went to the Frankfurt, or actually, Between Wild and Real went to the Frankfurt Book Fair this year. And one of the things I tried to do was make a compelling why this would be such a great movie pitch to go with it. So, I've heard that. I would love to pitch this movie. I think it would be fantastic.
I do, too.
And I think it is partly because it is very visual. Mm-hmm. I think I'm my background, though I did practice law, my undergraduate background is studio arts, and I was a sculptor. And I still am a sculptor. So I think that I just am a very sensory-oriented person, so smells, sounds, sight, you know, tactile. That's all really important to me, and I think that's clear in probably all of my writing.
It definitely comes through, especially when you're in New Mexico. There is so much to see and smell and feel, I mean, tactical-wise.
Yeah, I agree, and I love the state. I mean, it's a love letter to New Mexico, too. I love the state so much, and that's partly why I just, it's like a sensory, you know, smorgasbord.
It is. Now, you have a website, JenniferGEdelsonAuthor.com, and on that site you have a lot of your books, and people can find all about you there, right?
Yeah, I've got short stories that I've won awards for, and news, and my books, right, and some bio stuff. I think there's some book trailers on there, a bunch of different stuff.
I was interested to see how many awards, well, both of these books have won, and especially the second one have won.
Well, actually, so the second one just came out, and the second one just won the New Mexico Press Woman's Award for YA Fiction, and it's gone to the national level, so I'll find out in June if it placed. And so the award season for this book hasn't really started yet for the second book. The first book actually has won a ton of awards. Yeah, it won a bunch of regional awards and then the National Press Woman's Award, and I was really thrilled. I was really honored. It was a Benjamin Franklin Best New Young Adult Voice Award, which was a huge honor. The first one has done really well. The second one, so I'm hoping, fingers crossed, I expect to see some more awards. But so far, I mean, for how new it is, I was thrilled that it regionally did so well.
Yes. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised at the awards?
Yeah. I was. I feel like I've been sort of obsessed with this idea lately, but you've heard the term imposter syndrome.
Right.
And I feel like, I suffer from quite a bit of that. I think, when I practiced law, it was like, oh, I'm not a real attorney. I could be in court and be like, who's that person over? Watching myself. And I think I maybe didn't think I was a real artist, despite, had a lot of success with my art. I still do. So I think it's just me, partly, no matter what I do. I don't actually think I'm good at it.
I understand exactly what you're saying.
The series of books, I really love them, but I didn't really go into it thinking, I think I just really wanted to tell the story. And obviously I write because I really love to write. I don't think I can stop. And I want people to read it because I like connecting with other humans, but I don't really know what I expected from it. So definitely not. I mean, I'm thrilled that it's done so well. So it is a little surprising. I keep thinking someone's going to find out it was a mistake. Or when it wins something, I think, well, probably only two people were like in the running. So, but I've got good supportive family and friends to talk me down off that ledge.
That's good.
So, thank you for having me on. I'm thrilled to share these books with people, and I hope that everybody enjoys them. I love talking with people. So one of the things I always encourage people, I think on my website I have my email addresses and in the books, and I'm always open to feedback. I really love people's opinions, and good or bad, or constructive criticism, whatever it may be. I'm open to good discussions. So feel free to contact me.
That was Jennifer Edelson talking about her young adult novels, Between Wild and Ruin and Wild Open Faces. This is Tracy Hales-Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.